So listen, if you looked at the title of this week's episode before downloading it and hitting play, you probably already have an inkling that today we are going to be talking at some length about poop. So if you have a feeling you might get queasy or grossed out by talking about something every person who has ever lived does on a daily basis, that's totally fine, but this is your formal warning that we are talking about poop today. Like, a lot. I mean, we're talking about it in a very mature and medical way, but still. It's poop talk, basically from start to finish on the show today, so be advised. There are few things more scary and unsettling in life than being certain that you are chronically sick with something and not knowing what that something is or how to fix it. My guest today woke up one morning almost 10 years ago and knew she was sick. It came on suddenly, so initially it seemed like maybe it was food poisoning or the flu, but when something that painful and distressing to your digestive tract lingers longer than a few days, it's time to start considering that it might be something more serious. She went to go see a gastroenterologist who jumped to one of the most common diagnoses a person experiencing prolonged issues with their bowels might be having, which is IBS. It's a reasonable enough assumption to make, but she questioned the diagnosis simply because of how suddenly the illness had come about. If she had IBS, she felt like she would have noticed symptoms throughout her life, but this was a sudden, drastic change that felt more akin to an infection of some sort. She got all the standard tests done, checked multiple times for celiac and a number of other diseases commonly associated with digestive issues. As more and more potential diagnoses were leading to more and more dead ends with ineffective treatments, she decided to see a naturopath who immediately ordered something that in hindsight seems glaringly obvious, a stool sample. And through this sample, the naturopath was able to determine that she had contracted Giardia and that it had led to a series of other bacterial infections, resulting in severe swelling of her intestinal tract and probably leaky gut syndrome, which only caused a host of other issues. The naturopath prescribed a dietary change to treat the myriad issues that were plaguing her gut and overall digestive health, and it seemed to help somewhat, but not quite enough to feel like they had found the winning formula. Keep in mind, we're years into this thing at this point in the story. Years into consistent chronic illness, consistent doctor's appointments, consistent new diagnoses with new treatments, consistently doubling over in pain when she would eat certain foods, and consistent inconsistency with her bowel health. I don't know about you, but personally, that kind of sounds like an absolute living hell. Thankfully, her partner came to her having heard about a treatment that may sound, let's say, unappetizing when you first hear about it. But to a person suffering through a long-term chronic illness of this nature, even the most unappetizing treatment, if promising, can be a welcome light at the end of a very dark tunnel. When I hear stories like this, I can't help but marvel at the miraculous intricacies of medical science. But I also can't help but wonder why it is that Western medicine, for the most part, is strangely closed off to certain treatments that have been proven effective for certain difficult-to-treat conditions. If a medicine works, then you use it, right? Even if that medicine is, say, transferring healthy poop into a person who has chronically unhealthy poop in order to create a healthier bacterial culture in their intestinal tract. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to Stephanie Webb about fecal microbiota transfer, or FMT, which is the medically accurate way of saying, we're having a poop talk.
But I did try the dieting for a few years, and I tried some other things. I tried ultraviolet uridation, which is where they draw the blood out of your body, and it goes through a tube under a UV light, and that's supposed to like start a chain reaction to kill the candida in your bloodstream, and then it goes back into your body. So it's just a tube that goes like, pulls the blood out of your body, goes into this tube under the light, and then goes back into your body. And that was very expensive. It was really expensive.
Yeah, geez.
And I tried IV therapy where they just put nutrients, like vitamins, right into your blood. And that was very expensive too. I was just trying everything that I could to just make this easier and make myself heal as fast as possible. And I just sank so much money doing that. I spent thousands of dollars. I probably spent $5,000 right off the bat with those treatments, with vitamins, with the UV therapy, with IV therapy. And I just, my naturopath warned me, he's like, this is going to take time, you know, to heal. It takes a while, and it's going to be kind of a roller coaster. You're not just going to feel better and better every day. It's going to be like better one day, worse the next day, better the next day, worse the next day, you know, and that is true. I tried a lot of things before I decided to try FMT.
And how do you hear about FMT?
So, my partner, Ransom, he actually heard about it on a Vice episode and relayed that to me. They were doing a Vice episode, I think. One of the guys that was featured in it, he had ulcerative colitis, and he had, they were talking about not only just FMT, like that it was in clinical trials and what it was doing for people with C. difficile, but also featuring people who were doing it at home, like DIY treatments.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I think it was this guy who had ulcerative colitis, and he was doing home treatments, and it was just like basically saving his life. Like nothing else worked for him. Ulcerative colitis is, I don't know a whole lot about it. I just know it's extremely painful. It's a very, it's an awful disease. I think he was taking pills. Or that may have been another video I watched, but he was either taking pills or he was injecting it into his bum.
So or like he was like taking like pills that he had made of like other people's fecal matter.
And you know,
explain to me just what FMT is. Like, let's go. Like, what is the idea behind this?
A fecal microbiota transplant is where you take the poo out of one person and you put it into an unhealthy person, and it's supposed to help heal them. Basically, the healthy individual holds the right mixture of microbiota to sustain a healthier environment inside the bowels, inside the digestive tract. So that's the idea behind it, is once you transfer this into another person, that whole colony of microbiota works together and is supposed to help sustain a healthier environment or heal the environment it's in by just doing what it does.
I guess that does seem like something that you probably could do a DIY version of, where you're like, well, I've got this really awful gut condition where like I am just laid up all day long, every day I'm miserable. I've heard about this thing. I mean, if all I need is just some of my partner's poo in my stomach. Maybe I just, you know, ask them if they can put some of that stuff in a cup, and I buy some capsules, and I stick them, I scoop them up, and I, eat it. And I'm like, I don't, you know, like, I'm. It doesn't seem like it's all too much more complicated than that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but, and that's the thing. A lot of people are doing this at home. A lot of people are. Because it's actually, it's not... open to anyone, like the, you know, the medical procedure, like actually going to a hospital or a doctor or something and getting it done, it's not available in the United States.
Why do you think that is?
Because why do I think that is? I feel like the pharmaceutical industry is trying to figure out how to make money on it. I don't know. Like, it really doesn't make sense to me because there are tons of clinical trials available for FMT. Yeah. Tons. For, like, Lyme disease, mental illnesses, like anxiety and depression, autism, ulcerative colitis, IBS, inflammatory bowel disease.
So, I mean, this is kind of like... what made me interested in this story when you guys reached out to me is, and what always interests me about these kinds of stories, and in the world of like alternative medicine or whatever you want to call it, homeopathic medicine or naturopathic medicine, like anything that's like alternative to mainstream Western medicine, I feel like there's a feeling out there amongst like intellectuals and that if you do anything other than mainstream medicine, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. And you're like, and those people are quacks, and they're con people, and they're liars. But like, I hear these stories all the time about people who are like, I went to a normal regular doctor at a clinic, and they offered me like one of two diagnoses, and it was like, that was it. It was like, it's either this or this. And I was like, I don't think it's either of those. And they were like, nope, that's what it is. And I don't know why that's such a common thing. And I'm not, I don't want to have this conversation to shit on mainstream medicine, because I know that like a lot of good is done by mainstream medicine and by the treatments that we do have for dealing with things like, you know, kidney issues and heart issues and cancer. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously, like, there's a lot of good medicine available out there, but it's so weird to me. And I think it is this whole thing of like, where can you make money, that somehow the pharmaceutical industry has gotten a hold of like, there's approved medications for certain things. Mm-hmm. and we won't stray too far outside of those strictures.
Well, and you also have to consider that most gastroenterologists, they didn't take like they didn't study like microorganisms, you know,
which is weird.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, it is weird. It is weird. I will give you that. But also, I don't feel like they felt like that, those things connected, like gastroenterology and microorganisms, you know, which is insane. But like, you know, I've talked to, you know, I haven't talked to a ton of GI doctors lately, but I've talked to a lot of doctors and brought up FMT, and they just had no idea what it was. They had no clue.
And then, like, what did they think when you told them? Were they like, "Oh, actually, I can see," or were they like, "Nah, that's not real medicine"?
No, I've had a range of reactions. Some people have been very interested. Some doctors have been very, very interested. And nurses, you know, they want to hear more about it. They're curious, and they can, you know, I can tell that they can see the science behind that. I mean, it's really clear cut. It's just putting, if you understand the idea behind probiotics, you understand the idea behind FMT. You're just putting healthy bacteria into a body.
The only thing about it that's like weird is just that people are like, what? I'm eating someone else's poop, or like, I'm putting someone else's poop in me. But it's like, yeah, but if we're talking about this medically and like from a just stance of like, I've got bacteria in my digestive parts that isn't, that's killing me. And I need healthy bacteria in there to create a better environment for my food to digest. Like, which people in the medical community should understand that. It shouldn't be like a crazy idea. We're not talking about like getting a spell done. Like we're not talking about like going and like having someone like wave crystals over your stomach and like, you know, like not that I'm not shitting on that either. I'm just saying like, it's weird to me. There's this dogmatic clinging from certain people. Like you said, you talked to certain people that were very interested in it, doctors and nurses, but there seems to be sometimes this like weird dogmatic like response from people when you say like, have you ever heard of this or have you ever thought of this? Like if they didn't learn it in medical school, then it's bullshit.
Oh, exactly. If, no, know, that's and, exactly what it is. It's, yeah. 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 Just kind of stuck in their ways and like, you know, well, I didn't learn that in school. So that's gotta be like, yeah, some whack kind of medicine.
Well, my friend Kelsey was just on my show. We were talking about fat phobia, and like she really blew my mind talking to me about this. She had this rash that for years she was going to different doctors to try to figure out what this rash was. Uh-huh. And everyone, right when she would walk in, would say, oh, well, you're diabetic. Uh-huh. And they would instantly be like, well, you're diabetic. And she was like, no. I've been to several different doctors who have already tested me. Mm-hmm. I'm not diabetic. I'm not even pre-diabetic. Mm-hmm. I just need to know what this is. And they were like, you sure it's not because you're fat? Like, it was just like, they've been so taught that if a person comes in and they are way above a certain weight, then that person, their whatever their health issue is, it must be related to the way that they look and their weight, which is not the assumption that you make if a thin person comes in, because what we know is thin people can be just as unhealthy as fat people and have just a thin person could come in with the exact same rash and the instant assumption wouldn't be, it must be attributed to your size, which, and that makes sense when you think about that, but it's like they've been taught that, and it's kind of an Occam's razor thing. It's kind of like the most, what's the easiest, most obvious thing to reach for, you know? And I think that's what happened. That first GI doctor you went to was like IBS, just the most, what's the first thing that I can think of. But it's weird how difficult it can be sometimes to get them to consider other options and to look deeper, considering the just wide array of viral infections and bacterial infections that we keep discovering every year and day. And, you know, that they go to these sort of like standby diagnoses that are maybe right 70% of the time. It's like pretty reliable rate of success there with that diagnosis. But like, you got to be prepared that it might not be that, and that you're going to have to dig a little deeper. It's weird to me, the unwillingness to, you know.
Well, I kind of feel like it has something to do with the number of patients that doctors have to see every day.
Sure.
You know, like we have a shortage of doctors, in my opinion. Probably has to do with like how expensive school is and something about that maybe, but yeah, I'm sure just seeing so many patients a day, a lot of doctors are just like, I just want to get this over with, you know? And that's really sad. It's really sad. I saw so many doctors for this one thing, for yeast infections, you know, just like couldn't get rid of them. Every month it was like the same thing, every month it was chronic, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I'm doing everything right. Why does this keep happening to me? And every doctor I'd go to, the first question they'd ask is something about hygiene. Every time. They're like, well, are you being hygienic? Are you like, just the most basic insulting questions, you know, like, am I being hygienic? Like, I've been to so many doctors, you know, like, how could this be an issue with hygiene? You really think I just blow all my money and like wear the same underwear for a week? You know, like
at this point, like it's two, three years into asking people about this, and oh, well, you know, I haven't showered in 3 months. Is that it?
Yeah.
It's like, it's
very insulting. But I saw a doctor recently who gave me a lot of hope, who literally took a sample, looked under a microscope right then and there. I have never been to a doctor that did that. Never in my whole life. And I've had this issue for my, like, for a long time. he just took a sample, went to a microscope, brought me in, and was like, here, come look under the microscope with me. What? I've never been to a doctor that did this. Never. They always like take a swab and then they're like, okay, we'll give you test results in like 2 or 3 days. You know, he takes me in there. He looks under the microscope and he's like, you have irritated skin. It's basically eczema. You have eczema. And like, that's why this keeps happening. And he gave me a new treatment for it I'd never had. And it resolved everything.
This was recently, so this is after you did the FMT.
Yes, this is after FMT. Maybe we should back up, but...
Yeah, so let's back up. So we talked about FMT is not done in the United States. You hear about it from your partner through this Vice article. You decide maybe this is a route to go. How do you, how's this process unfold where you find a place to do it? And
So I started looking into it and... I found out that there was nothing available in the United States, that the only time they would treat you with FMT is if you had deadly C. difficile. And C. diff is a bacteria that typically you contract in a hospital setting, and it just demolishes your bowels. Usually they treat with antibiotics, but a lot of people have died from C. diff. So they started testing FMT, seeing if that would help. And it's like a 99% cure rate. Just putting someone else's poop in your body is a 99% cure rate for C. difficile.
So again, they know this. So they know that FMT is a successful cure for C. diff.
Yes.
This is known in the mainstream medical community. And still it's this thing of like, what's that? What is that? FMT?
Still,
we don't do that.
What's that? And like, but that's not available for other things because we don't know if it's dangerous or we want to protect you. Like, that's the whole idea they're trying to portray. But
chemotherapy is dangerous.
Yeah. They've been doing clinical trials for all these different conditions with FMT and like they are coming out real stellar. Like really, really, really good results on like autism.
Wow.
With MS, with Crohn's.
Wow.
Yeah, it's, and they're still just withholding it. They're just still keeping it from us.
Got to figure out how to make money off of it. Got to figure out how to make it
Well, if we give people FMT, then maybe they'll get better and they won't have to visit the hospital very often.
Yeah, you it's know? Weird. It's like, is it just like a icky thing? Is it like, ew, we just don't want to like offer that to patients?
That's
is it
probably
like,
part of it too. They just don't want it to have to tell patients what it is, you know?
We're going to put other people's poop in you. And it's like, but again, this is why like having this conversation at the beginning of the conversation, I was like, we're going to talk about one of those things that everyone does, but we all act like, ugh, like it's, you know, but it's just that thing. It's like, y'all shit every day and sometimes you're regular and sometimes you feel like good about your poops and sometimes you look down after you poop and you're like, I need to go to the doctor because that is bad. And you know, it's like it's understood on a person-to-person level that like your poop is a good metric of how you
to gauge your health
and what you're to gauge your health. And it seems so logical and reasonable and not at all like bizarre or crazy or like you're making some weird kind of experimental potion. It seems like any other kind of transfer. Like you've got a bad liver, we're going to put a healthy liver in your body. You've got a bad heart, we're going to put a healthy heart in your body. You've got, one of your lungs is punctured, we're going to take a lung out of this cadaver and give you a new lung.
Yes.
Like, this is the same thing, right? Like
right.
It's the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. So where do you find that you can go do this?
Right. So I looked into it and I found out that you could do it at a clinic in the UK called K-Mount. They also had a clinic open in Slovakia and in the Bahamas.
Okay.
So obviously I was like, I am going to the Bahamas. And I looked into it and I was like, I'm going to check out all three stations here and see what the cost is like of staying there. Cause I'm sure the cost of the treatment is the same. No, the cost of the treatment wasn't the same. The Bahamas was literally like twice as much. It was like $10,000 to do it. Plus you have to pay to stay in the Bahamas. So I was like, all right, the Bahamas off the table. Then there was the UK and Slovakia. So I looked into the UK and it was slightly more expensive. And at this point in my life, I was on quite a budget, especially considering how much I had spent on my health up to this point. I was like, I need to like really try to conserve here. So I decided to go with Slovakia.
Okay.
Because it was the least expensive option for me. Yeah.
Hey, that's probably a place you never thought you would go.
No, I barely knew it existed.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew the name, but you know, like I had never looked at Slovakia as a vacation hotspot. So, So we decided, me and my partner decided to go to Slovakia and do this treatment.
Do they have in these facilities on hand samples that they use that they store in the facility? Okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, or do they have to just be like, does there have to be a donor? Like your partner has to like come with you and be like, I offer up my sample for, you know, like, but they have.
Right.
Do they have to like match it to you in any kind of way? Like, does there have to be?
Okay. So what they do is they get samples from healthy individuals who are paid to donate. So they are like, they go through rigorous testing and like just to make sure that they're totally healthy. Their stool is tested. And these are people that like, you know, these are like athletic, very healthy people. And they donate their stool. And then they used to, this is my understanding reading into it, they did used to transfer the entire sample. And now and this has been for a while, this isn't just recently, but they did figure out how to separate the stool from the actual bacteria. So when you get a transplant with Taymount, you are just getting the healthy bacteria and they remove the stool and they remove the hormones.
Oh.
There are hormones involved too. So it's as clean as they can get it, you know?
I mean, like, honestly, at that level, when you're down to like stripping out bacteria from a mixture like that and trying to just get bacteria, I'm like, is it even really poop anymore?
Right.
It's like, yeah, it came from poop, but like, is it like, you know, I feel like it, the more you get into it, the more it's just like, is it really that far removed from any other kind of treatment where you're, cause like, yeah, I wouldn't like lick another person's spleen, you know, but like if I needed a healthy spleen, I would put it in my body and walk around with it in there for the rest of my life. You know, like, you know, it's like, So, okay. So you go to Slovakia and did you like Slovakia? Was it a cool place?
It was interesting. I mean, Slovakia is like, was part of the Soviet Union. It definitely kind of has that vibe a little bit. Like, I don't know. It's a cute place. It's very like, I've been to Europe. I say that like it's a one tiny place. I've been to Germany and it did kind of remind me of like, you know, that kind of European vibe, these small shops, and you know, you have to go to like three different stores to get everything you need. They don't have supermarkets and stuff. You know, and like you drive on the wrong side of the road and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, it's an interesting place. I always like commented on on the people walking around on the streets. They like were never smiling or laughing or anything. They always like seemed like they'd been betrayed by their family member or something, and they were like still, you know.
Sounds very, you know, like Eastern European.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it like was that kind of vibe. Yeah.
Very like, straight-faced, like, yeah, not exactly a cheery place to be, but they did have like farmers markets, which were really cool. I went to a couple farmers markets and they're really awesome. They're way more into sustainability than we are, so I love that. But yeah, it was a great place. Overall, I thought it was really cute. They had a lot of castles. I didn't really get to tour a lot because I was very tired. The treatment was very tiring. So I spent a lot more time, you know.
What do they do for that? So yeah. What are the different ways that they can do it? Like you talked earlier about people doing it at home, like making capsules or injecting it directly into their rectum. Mm-hmm. Like how do they do it at a facility? Like, or what's the process for you?
So at the facility, they injected it straight into my colon.
Okay.
So you show up once a day at the same time every day, and they put a tube up your bum, mm-hmm. and they just inject it straight into your butt, and then you just lay there for a little while so it can settle in, and so your body can absorb the liquid, so it doesn't just like come right out of you after you stand up. And then you go about your day. You do your thing, and then you come back the next day, and you do it again, and you take the weekend off. So I did it for 2 weeks. You could opt for like a 1 week treatment or a 2 week treatment.
And you were like, if I'm going there, I'm getting the works.
Yeah, I did the 2 week treatment. It was somewhere around $5,000, I think. You know, well worth it in my opinion. I won't go into detail here, but I did try the DIY method before I decided to go to Slovakia. It was not cool. It was not something I'd want to try ever again. I know people that, you know, I've heard of people, and I've met people online that are doing this at home, that are doing this DIY because they don't have the means to go to another country, you know, or they have like a sick child. And they can't take their sick child to Slovakia, and like, you know, so they're doing it at home, and those people are champs. Like they make YouTube videos and stuff. I watched a few YouTube videos of how to do it, you know.
Wow.
And but yeah, I decided to go that route instead, especially because I wanted that consistency. I wanted to be able to do this every day, and like I'm a working adult. I can't make a fecal transplant every day and like without like just leaving my job, abandoning my job.
How soon after doing this procedure do you start to feel a difference to be able to feel whether or not it's working?
Immediately.
Really?
And it was small things, you know, but some bigger, more significant things. Uh-huh. I said earlier that I couldn't eat garlic without being laid out for the entire day, just like sick to my stomach, like, and just like fatigued, like couldn't move, couldn't get up without getting dizzy, like that kind of thing. The reason being, let me give a little bit of background. Like garlic for me is a candida killer. So like it kills candida. And when you kill candida, you're actually like releasing a lot of toxins into your body that cause what's called a die-off effect. So the die-off effect is actually just the toxins released from the candida, from the organisms, getting into your bloodstream, getting into your body, and making you sick.
Mm.
So that's what I mean when I said that it was kind of doing more harm than good, because, you know, I could try to kill this stuff, but I had so much of it in my body that it was making me really sick to try to kill it, you know? And in turn, I was just getting all of these other issues, you know, like it was just this, yeah, it was just this cyclical effect, you know, like kill it. And then I would feel a little better in some ways, but then I would get worse in other ways. And then it would just start all over again, cyclical, just over and over. So, back to the effects. After I did my first treatment, I tried some garlic and it did not lay me out flat. It was like, I wasn't even sensitive to it.
Wow.
Like I tried a little bit and then I was like, okay, I didn't feel anything from that. So I tried a bunch more, like put a bunch of garlic in my soup. And nothing. I felt totally fine. No fatigue. I mean, I was generally kind of fatigued, but nothing like I had experienced before. Nothing like, oh, I can't get off the couch all day, you know?
Yeah.
So it was like, that was a pretty remarkable difference right away.
Yeah.
My mood lifted. I felt more clear. Brain fog was a major issue. I just couldn't concentrate on anything. I could barely do a job. I had a really easy job at the time. I chose a very easy job, just a reception job at this place where I just answer phones and greet people, just the easiest thing I could imagine. And like I could barely do that job sometimes. The brain fog was just so bad. And it had completely lifted when I started doing FMT.
Wow.
So yeah, just a couple things there. With my bowel movements though, that was a little rockier, you know. You have to imagine that when you do something like this, it can shock your body, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know exactly what happened because, you know, these doctors, or they're not doctors exactly. They're not doctors. These people at the clinic in Slovakia, you know, they said, oh, you'll be right as rain. Like, we'll do this. And then you'll start like pooping normally and you'll feel so much better. And I did feel so much better, but I, you know, things didn't get normal like right away, but they did change immediately. I don't know how to explain this without going into graphic detail, and I just don't think that it's necessary. But
just that you didn't go instantly back into pooping a healthy toothpaste consistency poop, and you were like, that's it, that's the kind of poop I've been looking for mm-hmm, years. Mm-hmm. It took a while to
a lot of people do experience that. And that's what I've read, and that's what I've seen people talk about, is that once they start doing FMT, it goes normal right away, and then, you know, it digresses. Like, it doesn't stick around forever. You're not healthy just right away, and then everything's, you know, perfect from then on out. Like, it is a process. Like, you have to imagine you're injecting a bunch of bacteria into your body, and like, not all of that is going to survive.
You know?
It's not all going to find a great place to live in there. Like, you've got a hostile environment going on. So it's got to duke it out. It's got to survive. And that takes time. It takes time for it to proliferate, and that's normal, you know?
How long ago was this that you went over there?
2018.
Okay, so how recent was the thing that we were talking about with the eczema, where you were saying that you got like and is the eczema related to this still?
It's all related. That's a,
and so you're still dealing with all of
related.
The.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So the main thing that FMT changed for me was my tolerance to foods and like eliminating the brain fog and the fatigue. Like, those two things were completely crippling for me. I could barely hold down a job, you know?
So
So yeah, those things, getting rid of that was huge for me. And then reducing a lot of my sensitivities to foods was huge as well.
Yeah.
And it did, like, it took a few months afterward. It did take a few months for me to see, like, a major change. But things gradually got better. And then they did kind of level out after, like, I don't know, I'd say like 10 months, things kind of leveled out and I stopped seeing like improvements, you know. It just kind of like leveled out and I just hit a plane there. And so I decided to do it again because if you think about it, like, do you just like take probiotics for a couple weeks and then like hope
and
for
then
the
you're
best?
Better?
No, yeah. you keep taking probiotics, you know.
And did, like, you go back over there?
No, I found out that they opened a clinic in Canada.
Oh,
in
great.
Vancouver.
That's a lot closer.
Well, Vancouver Island. It's a town called Duncan.
I bet that's gorgeous there.
So gorgeous, yeah. We did make a little bit of a vacation out of that.
You got
as well.
It.
Yeah. So yeah, it was 2019. I went to Canada to do same place, Taymount Clinic. They just opened another one in Canada, and it was very new. I was, you know, it would have been nice if I could have just gone to Canada the first time, but yeah, went to Canada this time and did it again. This time I took the treatments home. They let you do that your second time around. First time you have to like do it there. Second time they'll just give it to you and you can self-administer at home, and it's a lot more affordable that way.
Yeah.
So that's what I did with Canada.
I imagine it functions just like an enema. Like you just like squirt it up.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 You just, that's still a lot easier than DIY. You're not like mixing it or doing anything crazy. You're just, in a tube, you just thaw it out and then you just do the thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, something interesting about that clinic though, it got closed down permanently because apparently, this is just what I read. I only read this like within the last few months. Apparently the doctor who opened that clinic was operating illegally. I don't know how this came about. I don't know how he was able to just like open a clinic through Taymount and like get around all of this. But so apparently this doctor, his name's Dr. Bill Code. He went to Taymount. He was diagnosed with MS. So he went to Taymount and he got a fecal transplant. And he saw such remarkable improvements that he was inspired to open a clinic in Canada. Uh-huh. And him and his wife opened the clinic, and they'd been operating for under a year probably, or maybe a little bit more than a year before Health Canada, I think that's what they call it, shut them down because apparently they were operating illegally. They have the same rules that we have in the US, that it can only be, they can only use it to treat patients with C. difficile. And this doctor was just giving it to everybody.
Wow.
Was just giving it to everybody. He was just like, didn't give a shit, you know?
Well, all right.
This
guy's
a hero.
That goes back
honestly
to the thing we were talking about earlier, where it's like, cause I still look at that, I'm like, it's kind of, I mean, it's very different, but it's kind of like, you know, like the Kevorkian question, where it's like, is he a bad guy or was he like trying to help people? You know, was he trying to like, and obviously that's a very different situation, but it's that same world of like, I think that there's people in the medical community who see treatments like this and go, hey, you know what? It's unethical for us to keep this from people, and I'm going to figure out a way to get it to people. And then there's also people who are like, there's this weird, for such a science-based profession and field, there's this weird like dogmatic code that us normal people don't really get to see, that it seems like there's like this mentality of like, we only go with, you know, FDA approved or medicines and treatments, and like we don't listen to anyone else other than our governmental higher ups who approve what we can and cannot say is legitimate treatment and medicine, and that seems like dangerous. It just seems like, you know, like and it seems irresponsible for people in a medical profession and community to actively suppress potential withhold treatments. And you see this with there's all kinds of things that are sort of confounding mainstream medicine, you know, these different bacterial infections like Lyme disease and all the, you know, these different things. And it's like, I don't know why we wouldn't be just exploring all possible options at all times and letting the best possible medicine win out, you know.
Well, you know, this has been around for centuries and centuries. It's not new medicine. It's just in a different form. You know, I think it was Chinese medicine. They called it yellow soup. And it was literally like you would drink shit to cure your to cure like diarrhea and other diseases. It's been a thing forever. Like people have ingested shit to fix ailments for a long time. But yeah.
How are you feeling now? Is it still, is it something that you imagine you're just going to more or less live with some version of for the rest of your life? Or do you feel better?
I feel so much better. Remarkably better. Yes. I can hold down a job. I can eat out at restaurants again, even though my options are still limited. I can actually go through periods of having a normal bowel movement every day. Like, normal. Like, not just like, oh, I'm having a bowel movement every day. I mean, I look at it and it's normal.
Yeah.
And
it feels normal.
That's unreal to me. That is not something that I imagined I would get to do. Just seeing how far gone I was, how bad it was. Things are much, much, much better. You know, I still have a ton of food sensitivities, but not nearly as many as I used to, you know? I still have to stay on like basically a paleo diet. I eat meat and vegetables and fruit, and but I don't do sugar. I don't do like grains, you know, or a minimal grains, very minimal. And that's normal. Like a lot of people have paleo diets; they work better for them. I'm not too distressed by that because I can actually go out and like find a lot of menu items that fit my diet now. The main issues are completely gone. Like the fatigue, the brain fog. I still have like eczema, you know, like I still have minor things that are annoying. They're obnoxious, but they're not ruining my life. You know, they're not keeping me from enjoying my life and, you know, doing things that normal people do, for the most part. So, much better, and I know that I owe it to FMT, and I owe it to that doctor in Canada who went out on a limb for everybody that he treated and just handed it out no matter what they had. He's just like, well, it helped my MS, so I'm just gonna give it to this. And I wish I knew that then. I really wish I knew this at that point, because when I went and got my treatment, I literally just drove up, ran in, and they were so like happy. I could tell like the people there handing me my treatment in a freezer bag thing. They were just like beaming, and I like looking back at it on it, I'm like, they knew they were doing the right thing. They knew they were doing a really good thing. And they knew that they were doing something they weren't supposed to be doing. And I just walked in there and was like, awesome, thank you so much. Okay, bye, thank you. You know, and like, wow. Man, I wish I could have given them a more sincere thank you. Just like, and I tried to reach out to this doctor, but you know, the clinic's completely shut down. The email address is shut down, like everything. So, yeah. You know, anyway.
Well, maybe by some turn of fate, someone who works there or even that doctor will hear this and know that you're very appreciative, you know?
Yeah, I hope
they're following,
I don't get
the hashtags and
more trouble,
yeah.
By doing this either.
Well, cool. Well, this is wild. I mean, this is it's honestly like a less crazy story than I thought it was going to be. I was like, let's go down the rabbit hole of this wild story. But like the more that we talk about it, the more I'm like, yeah, it seems all pretty like
straightforward,
practical medicine, yeah. To me. It's weird. I think the real story is like, why is it being suppressed or withheld or avoided? And you know, and again, it's like, I don't want this to be a thing where I'm like coming after mainstream medicine, because I know that it's not like a conspiratorial thing. I know that like doctors aren't like getting together in dark rooms and like deciding which medicine. I know that it's probably just more about like money and bottom lines and things like that. And in individual people don't really have a lot of say in it. Mm-hmm. They're just doing what they learned in medical school and what they learned in their residency. And they're just, you know, practicing to the best of their abilities. Mm-hmm. So that this isn't, but it is, I just think it's fascinating. Yeah.
It is fascinating. I would suggest reading some of these studies about, you know, what they're trying to treat. You know, these clinical studies are very interesting, especially the ones on autism. I don't know, that one kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Just like really reducing autistic symptoms. Like some people, I've read a few case studies where, after FMT treatments, nonverbal autistic people were able to speak.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
It's
insane.
Again, it's like, I don't think that we go deep enough on like trying to figure out what's causing a person to be nonverbal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did an episode like a year ago with a guy who was a neuroscientist, and I was asking him about, you know, what do we know about brains? And he was just like, well, we don't know anything. He's like, we know enough to know that we don't know. He's like, that we have very, very, very limited knowledge, and we have a lot of knowledge, uh-huh. But we have enough knowledge to know that like what we have is like 1% of the information. And so when we're trying to figure out what's going on in a nonverbal autistic person's brain that's making them nonverbal, we might not be even looking in the right place. Mm-hmm. Like we, you know, and
exactly.
And just making our best guesses. And God, the fact that like a bacterial issue could be causing something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't even think that that's something that most people are even considering.
Yeah.
There is a universe that exists inside each of us. There is a massive universe of bacteria and, you know, microorganisms that are interacting and interplaying and, mm-hmm. and you know, and we're only able to see so much of it at once. So yeah, I think, I don't know. I'm fascinating stuff, Stephanie.
Fascinatingly,
I appreciate you.
Practical and
yeah,
not as fascinating as you may have imagined it would be. Just kind of makes
yeah.
sense.
Yep. Yep. Well, I really loved Yours and Ransom's turtleneck and blazer video. It was one of my favorites that I've seen. And I told Ransom, I was like, you need to post that. And I don't think he did it. I think he just sent it to me. But I was like, really, like, I was, for me, that was kind of a really cool thing, because I've been a fan of Ransom's music for years. And to be like, that's Ransom Widener singing one of mine. So I was like, so... It's very cool.
I'll have to pass,
you know, and
it on.
I was a
that.
Fan of Zodiac. Was it Zodiac Empire? Was that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. Zodiac
yeah, that was
Empire.
Great, that was a great outfit.
That's our band. Yeah,
that was a great little outfit that you had.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, this was cool. This is great. Anything else you want to say about FMT?
I don't know. I think that pretty much tops it. Yeah, I can't think of anything else specifically, but it's really straightforward, guys. Just
yeah, thank you. Well, thanks for being willing to take the time today to chat. You know,
yeah,
this is fun.
No, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I really hope that anyone who's looking for something, some relief in their health can stumble upon this and like maybe gather some valuable information from it, you know, and relate, you know, and like get some hope. Life can be tough. And everybody needs
the other good thing about a conversation like this is that there's a lot of people who find themselves struggling with some kind of illness, mm-hmm. and they just can't seem to find a treatment that will do something for it. I mean, this is a pretty, I know many people in my personal life who have had some kind of struggle similar to this. And mm-hmm. I think that a good message from this conversation is just like, don't stop turning over stones and mm-hmm. looking under it. Like, mm-hmm. keep looking, keep searching.
Keep trying new things. And like, even after doing FMT, like I kept trying new things because variety is really important. I've come to find like trying different things, variety, like don't lose hope. You just got to keep trying new things, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it'll keep you going. It's good.
Awesome. Well, all right, there that is. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed talking with her. She's very knowledgeable about the topic, and I mean, she should be. She's been dealing with it for years and years and years, so it was great to talk with her. I'm really glad that she was willing to talk with me about something so personal, and I think it's important to talk about, like, the different ailments that might beset us. But it's time now to go to my favorite segment on the show. It's the TikTok. TikTalk. We're live on TikTok. We go live every Sunday on TikTok and record the intro and outro of the show. We're live right now, so we're going to go to the audience and see if they have anything they would like to contribute. Does anyone out there have any questions about poop health or comments on poop health that you would like to share? Generous Nacho Prince says, what about Giardinera? Giardinera? Is that a thing? What's that? I don't know what that is. Should I Google that? Let me Google it right now. Oh, that's a food? Okay. Giardiniera is an Italian relish of pickled vegetables in vinegar or oil. So don't pick up a jar of Giardia and think that it's a jar of Giardiniera. Don't get those two confused. And don't get any Giardia in your Giardiniera. You won't like that. Yeah, Sarah Smart just asked, what is Giardinia? And I think that's what the person was saying, but it's that food. Or Giardia is a bacterial infection that affects your digestive health, and it can lead to swelling in your intestines, which can lead to leaky gut syndrome, and leaky gut syndrome can lead to all kinds of problems where bacteria on the things that you're eating are leaking into your body and creating all different kinds of bacterial infections and issues. And you know, people can get things like Stephanie, my guest, got candida, which is a really nasty bacterial infection. But the FMT is effective in treating all of that. And it really makes sense when you think about it, that it, like, and we talked about this in the episode, but it really is like replacing a thing that's not worth it, working, an unhealthy thing, with a healthy thing. We do this all the time with organ transfers and like replacing a defective heart or liver or kidney with a working one. It's just like that. Like, you're taking healthy poop with a healthy bacterial culture and putting it into someone's innards who has an unhealthy tract. So it makes sense. Ashbro Pro says FMT donors are screened for mental health. Mind-gut connection could be an answer to depression. Yes, and we talked about that on the episode. So that's really fascinating too, that not only is this effective in treating bacterial infections and you know, helping issues with your digestive health, but it actually has connections to mental health. They're using it for all kinds of things. Like Stephanie mentions in the episode that like they've had incredible results with people on the autism spectrum. Like, nonverbal people with autism have been able to come back and be verbal with FMT, which is so wild. So, but it also, again, makes sense that everything in the body is connected. It's weird that we tend to think of anything that's going on neurologically as solely a brain issue that couldn't have any connection to what you're eating or what you're taking in. Why would we not always make that connection? It's so fascinating. Sarah Smart says, why doesn't anyone know about this? That's kind of the question, I think, that I had while doing the interview with Stephanie, is like, why is Western medicine not utilizing this more commonly? Is it just an aversion to like poop being gross and the idea of like taking healthy poop and putting into someone who has an unhealthy bacterial culture in their colon? Is that just like a gross thing and we're not doing it because of that? Because that's a really weird reason to not utilize a potentially really, really useful medical treatment, right? Or is it something that has to do with the marketability of it and not quite being able to find a way to make good money off of it, and the pharma industry like suppressing this information? I don't know. Like, what do you think is the reason? Because I have the exact same question. Why don't more people know about this? It seems so logical that poor gut health and poor bacterial cultures in your digestive system could have all kinds of effects on your mental health. Stephanie talks about the fact that she had like major brain fog and a really hard time focusing and concentrating. And she had to pick a simpler job, a job that she knew was going to be like very not demanding of her and her mental capacities, because she could only handle so much in a day. And after FMT, her brain fog, totally cleared up, and she was able to like focus and work a lot more efficiently. So yeah, it could be a cure or a treatment for depression, for anxiety, for general fatigue and brain fog. It's not just about like fixing the regularity and health of your bowel movements. Could do that as well. Maybe's KB's says, LOL, I left like 15 minutes ago and we were talking about Easter, and now I'm back and it's FMT. Yeah, we are recording this on Easter, and we were talking about Easter earlier, but now we're talking about FMT, so welcome back. Ashbro Pro says, are these studies being done in the U.S.? I don't know. I know that it's outlawed in a lot of places in the U.S., and I don't know what that's about. I'm not sure exactly like why there's sort of a negative stigma. Stephanie, when I interviewed her, mentioned that many doctors and nurses that she mentioned this to had never even heard of it. So I don't know what the deal is. I don't know why. And it's not a new technique. This is also in the episode, but she talks about how there's a thing in Chinese culture called yellow soup that they would just feed people healthy, like a soup made of healthy fecal matter from healthy people when they were having like digestive problems. And Ashbro Pro also puts $3 sign suggesting that the issue is money. And it probably is. Like, how are you supposed to effectively market this and make it sleek and sexy? And maybe it's literally just that they can't figure out how to like, you know, sell like a home kit. Because this really, it could be the kind of thing where like, you just go and pick up a kit from a clinic, and they give you a kit and they send you home with it. And it could be like, ask your local clinic about Tritaxtrix. I don't know. But I guess when people find out, like, what is Tritaxtrix? And it's like, oh, it's healthy fecal samples from people with a healthy fecal bacterial culture. And you inject it into your butt. It's like, I guess that's not a really, like, sexy commercial. And then you're the actor that's cast to be in the commercial for Tritaxtrix. And you're, like, smiling and, like, playing tennis and stuff. And all people can think about is, like, that person injected healthy poop into their colon earlier today. I don't know. Is that the reason why we're suppressing it? Or is it just like a Western superiority thing, like a Western superiority complex where we just want to like promote the superiority of Western medicine over Eastern medicine? I don't know. I don't know what the holdup is. Cause it actually seems like something that could be very effective for a host of issues that are really common. KB instead says, your gut is your second brain. I have colitis, among other autoimmune diseases, and gut health is vital. Yeah, so a lot of autoimmune diseases are connected to gut health, and there's a reason why there's that old saying of, you got to go with your gut or listen to your gut, because it's kind of true that your gut is your second brain. I like that. That intuition and emotion can come from the gut. And it's so weird that we tend to think of these different areas and functions on the body as being separate. Obviously, it's one big machine that if any of it doesn't work, the whole thing shuts down. So if my kidneys stop working, I'll die if I don't get healthy kidneys. If my heart stops working, obviously I'll die. If my lungs stop working, I'll die. If my stomach stops working, if my digestive tract isn't working, I'm going to die from that eventually. And if I don't die right away, I'm going to be incredibly uncomfortable and in lots of chronic pain, and also very susceptible to lots of other infections. Joshua Davies says, transplant that kidney piss filter. Yes. Transplant a tiny speck of poo. Nope. Oh, so you're saying that, oh, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. You're saying that in Western medicine, they're like, sure, we'll transplant that kidney piss filter, absolutely, no problem, but we're not going to transplant a tiny speck of poop, like, and that's really what it is. It's boiled down so much that, like, it's not like they take actual, like, a clump of poop and shove it up your butt. It's like they're literally taking, like, bacterial samples out of the poop and turning it into a mixture. It doesn't even look like poop. It's pretty much unrecognizable, so it is weird. Joshua Davies also says, Candida is a yeast, yes. I have heard expired bread is bad for this reason. And yes, it is a yeast. You're right. You are correct with that. Culinary Code says, hey, Austin, loving the TikTok album, best money I've ever spent. Love that, Culinary Code. That's what we like to hear on this Easter Sunday while we're doing the Sunday live show, is that you bought the TikTok album and that's the best money you've ever spent. I love, love, love that. Thank you very much. Jennifer 73190, who is also Sweet Mama J, says, I was embarrassed to see a gastro culture issue. So is there that too? That we have a culture in Western culture in America that we're like embarrassed about gastrointestinal issues. Maybe that's part of it too. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, cause even like me hosting this conversation on the show, I know that there was a lot of like, I don't know, what do I say? What's the title? Do I just say FMT is the title of the episode? Or like, do I be kind of tongue in cheek about it and call it like poop talk? Like, I don't know. Like, are people going to listen? Are people going to be grossed out? I don't know. But it's like, why would they be grossed out? It's just a talk about our health. It's something everyone does. Everyone poops. Like, we all poop. And like, we all know that, checking in on your poop is a good metric of how your health is doing. So why should we be embarrassed about it? But I'm glad that you said that. And you know what? I think we're going to call it right there. Thank you, everyone, for your questions, for your comments. Thanks for hanging out on the TikTok. Stick around. We'll keep hanging out, but I'm just going to wrap the podcast up. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com. My website just got an amazing facelift. by my girlfriend, Mary Neville. She killed it. Go check it out. Or by looking up austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. I love when people buy my albums on Bandcamp, not iTunes or Amazon. Bandcamp all the way. Bandcamp has a better profit share with indie artists. Do that. Or look up Austin Archer wherever you stream music. My music and this podcast are all mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. He's the best in the biz. If you got an audio project that you need mixed and mastered, go to themarmalademusic.com and tell Chris, I heard your work on People Pleaser. Austin told me about you. He's going to give you 20% off your first project. So that's a really, really great deal. And you should do that. The TikTok portion of our show is moderated by Sweet Mama J, and we thank you so much, Sweet Mama J, and love you so much. Really, really appreciate it. Okay, that's the show. Take care of yourselves. Monitor how your poop's doing. Wear your masks. Be nice. Love you. Bye-bye.